kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's
actually,
up, everybody?
Yeah, maybe it's not right. Sorry. All right. Sorry about that. I was just correcting this horrible thing that I said that was wrong. I don't think it's Ray Maggini. Ray Maggini, I don't remember, but
oh, it's a different
I thought his
one
name
then.
Was Ray. Yeah, it's maybe his
what
name
it says Ray. That he sat on the couch and like everybody thought that he wasn't real and that only Homer could see him, and then they were like, no, he's actually there. He just.
Yeah, well, the guy I'm thinking of like had a backwards baseball cap and sunglasses and did finger guns, and you know, he was like a cool extreme 90s dude.
I love it. I'm leaving all of this in the show.
It's killing me. I don't know the guy's name. Nothing. I thought it was Ray. I thought it was Ray, but
No one's going to know what we're talking about. Nobody.
You get your homework, Chris. You get your homework. Everyone listening, you have yours as well.
What if I just type in generic 90s dude into fandom and see what it gives me? Oh my God.
Yeah.
It gave me a Simpsons quote page.
What? Oh God.
What?
People are going to just be piecing this episode together. By the way, I'm Joe. I'm the host. Cole, you're here. What's up? Grant Henry's here. How are you doing? And Chris Baker's in studios. You're
it's
here as well. How are
here.
You doing?
Yeah.
I'm doing great. We're talking Simpsons right now.
I think the just picked up on the term generic and that was it. So disappointed. They just a sad day for generic characters everywhere. I can't find this guy, but I think it's great that I typed in generic 90s dude and got a hit. So I'm good with it.
Well, that's the last time Chris was on, we talked Marvel, so this time we only can talk 90s cartoons.
Yes.
Right? Is that the rule?
Rocko's Modern Line. Rocko's Modern Line.
I'm just going to hold my eyeballs in my hands like a real monster.
Speaking the brain. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. So, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, you know, still working with Zen Studios. We just put out a new game. Well, technically not new. It was on Apple Arcade last year, but it's just reached a bunch of new platforms this week called Dreadnautical. It's a turn-based tactical strategy game with roguelike elements, kind of got like a eerie, Lovecraftian atmosphere. People seem to generally enjoy playing that, so that's cool. You know, I guess that's the plug.
You answered like the first four questions we were going to ask.
We're so fucked for the rest of
this
show.
This is the day after launch, right? Of on console. So this is like this is the press tour. This is the Chris Baker,
right?
Sort of, you know, exactly.
Chris Baker press tour extravaganza.
That's right.
First stop. From you know, my office.
It's like your warm up for dealing with the better shows.
Yeah, you know, hitting Conan and Colbert next week. You know.
Yeah. But you get
at this point, I wouldn't be shocked if they brought you guys on for an interview with how you know the guest pool is limited when it comes down to recording on Skype. How many older guests don't understand what Skype is?
Right. Well, the sad thing is like, you know, I've got like a Yeti microphone, so it's like better than 80% of the audio that's coming through in all of these like interviews and even newscasters at times, especially on early on when, you know, it was just like people on their iPhones or whatever.
Yeah. Still, people are refusing to wear headphones on these talk show interviews, and they're just talking over each other and the mics are cutting out and they're what? Can you repeat that? It's like, it's really basic stuff. Just put on the cans and everyone's happy.
We have reached a point where Twitch broadcasters have better quality broadcasts than actual cable news stations.
Yeah.
It's not too far off.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's yeah. So you, time. Yeah. Just speaking of that, you know, you guys have been, I mean, you're continuing to crank over at Zen there. How have you all been affected by this whole thing? I know, like, you're in the States, right?
Yeah.
Mel's in the States. Everyone else is in Budapest.
Yeah. The,
oh, wow.
Most of the studio, you know, we are a Hungarian developer. So most of our studio is in Budapest. And we're pretty much doing what everybody else is doing in that everyone is working from home now. And so far, you know, it seems like people are doing all right. You know, it's slowing some things down. I think that's the case for everybody. But we still have our normal calls and people are able to do their work and develop their games. And so, excuse me.
Did you have an office to begin with, or did you work from home?
I personally worked from home this whole time. So
absolutely nothing changed for you.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm kind of, I know what's going on over there, but I'm not there to give you a firsthand description, but you know, from my end, like it's basically the same thing. You know, I had a kid a couple weeks ago, so that's changed
things. Congratulations.
Yeah. Congrats.
Thanks.
Exciting.
How did you get time away?
Holy crap.
My wife is nice, I guess. I don't know.
you are going to owe so many favors for this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you wasted your free time on us.
I'm technically working right now, so thanks for that. Nice fun way to work right now.
Oh, that's nice verbal air quotes there.
Yeah, but this Simpsons thing is still killing me, I got to say. But anyway.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out the name of this character from The Simpsons. Give us all the details on this character. We need to figure this out.
So, yeah, before the show, we were talking about, like, characters that came in and replaced characters or characters that were added to be, you know, spice up the show or whatever. And there was this one episode, I want to say season 7-ish, 6-8 maybe, who just, like, the joke was, you know, we've got so many episodes now, we need to bring in a new character. And all this character did the whole episode was just sit on the Simpsons couch. I'm pretty sure he had like a backwards baseball cap and sunglasses and made finger guns and was like, "Hey, Mrs. S," you know, like just really, really, you know, extreme 90s dude sitting on the couch. And he didn't, you know, they would just like point to, I thought his name was Ray. Like, I guess I'm wrong because I look up Ray and it's somebody else. But I know somebody out there listening knows exactly what I'm talking about and they're screaming the name of this character. And, you know, they're probably also screaming some detail I misdescribed there a second ago. But
well, actually, he didn't have a backwards baseball cap. It was a beanie.
Yeah, comic book guy is listening and is
worst guess judging me. Ever.
Yes, exactly.
I typed in backward ball cap and Google corrected me that it is backwards. And apparently my redneckery will not be tolerated.
No. As a former editor, I will tell you that backward without the S is the American way of saying that is the preferred American way to say it. Whereas backwards with an S is the preferred British English way to say it.
Ah.
So there you go.
I hear I just thought it was just harassing my redneckery.
Well, like you're like going in all sorts of directions. I wasn't counting on talking about Simpsons, AP Style Guide.
I was going to say, while we're talking correct pronunciation and spelling and stuff like that, disc versus disc, D-I-S-C versus D-I-S-K. Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, disc with a C is like a compact disc.
And disk with a K is like a floppy drive, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why the fuck do people get that backwards online?
I'm a redneck and I know it. Come on now.
People get that back. I didn't know people get
they
that.
They do a
that
lot.
But I do like, wonder something's wrong with my disk drive on my Xbox and they spell it with a K. I'm like, there's a huge difference between disk drive with a C and disk drive with a K. You need to make sure you're clarifying which one you're going with here.
We're talking about people who can't get your correct. So
true too.
You're asking too much here.
I am.
I'm thinking about like a Frisbee disc, like that would be with a C. So are C discs round and other discs are
Magnetic.
I think a C disc, probably the etymology is from discus.
Yes. You know? Mm-hmm. Totally.
So if it looks like the shape of a discus, if you could, you know, you could throw a compact disc like a discus, I guess. you know, as opposed to a floppy drive, which is a disc with a K. I don't know what that etymology would be.
I've thrown a few bad burns into the trash from across the room, so I think they count. The CDs. Will Dread Nautical be coming out on discus? It's my question. PS4. Limited run.
Not at the moment. It is not physical in any form. But
so you guys, you're getting out of the pin game. The pin game is straight. Like, well, you got a couple physical things there, but you know, you did the Operencia thing. Huh? Now you're doing the Dreadnautical. So you're going like.
We also got Castle Storm 2 coming this year.
Well. Oh, that's yeah, that's right. That's right. What's the name of that studio? I'm drawing a blank. They made like Psychonauts and
Double Fine.
Double Fine. I feel like every game they do is just such a massive departure design wise from the one they made prior. And I'm like, Zen is going this direction now. We've got you've hopped out of pinball. You hopped into like dungeon crawl, first person RPG dungeon crawler, and now you're in like some sort of cartoonish eldritch strategy advance wars situation. I'm just like, okay, so next, I don't know.
Yeah, the reality is we pretty much have put out non pinball games pretty consistently for a long time. But you know, I think we in recent years, especially with like Operencia and Dreadnautical, and even Castle Storm a few years ago, you know, we've kind of up the quality, I guess, or whatever. You know, we've had games like Kick Beat, that was like a rhythm game that was, you know, relatively well received.
Waiting for Kick Beat too.
Oh yeah, I remember Kick Beat.
Yeah. Even like way back in the day, we did, you know, long before I was there, the DS version of Ghostbusters was Zen Studios.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. We did a Punisher game on PlayStation 3. You know, we've got a lot of diversity. Did
the Punisher game on PS3 and Xbox?
The PS3 one. It's called No Mercy. It was like an Unreal shooter kind of thing. You might be thinking of a THQ game.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other Punisher game.
It was a PS3 exclusive 2009, I think. I'm gonna have
to look that up. I gotta find out more about the roots of
Zen. It's not available anymore.
eBay's got it. Yeah, you know,
that was still the early days of the studio. So, you know, the games have definitely gotten better over the years. And, you know, Castle Storm was actually a really big hit, you know, in terms of indie games in 2013, which is why we're finally making Castle Storm 2 this year.
That's great.
And you know, Operencia, of course, was a first-person dungeon crawler. I was the lead writer on that game, and people seem to like the writing in that, so I'm pretty happy about that. And the rest of the game's great too. So and then now Dreadnautical is, you know, our take on tactics, and you know, turn-based tactics, and it's like a. It is Lovecraftian, but it's also like it doesn't take itself too seriously. My other kind of like elevator pitch for it is Twin Peaks on a boat, the animated series, the game.
I'll take it.
So, you know, that doesn't exist. There is no Twin Peaks on an animated boat. Twin Peaks on a boat, the animated series. But if there were, I kind of feel like it would be what Dreadnautical is. So, you know, it's kind of quirky as opposed to like just constant, you know, it's not really super scary. You know, there is an element of dread to it, as in the title. And it is really hard. So it's scary in that regard whenever you've got a bunch of thralls, as we call them. That's what like one of the major enemies, all these different monsters around you. That's very scary as well. And there's a very like the sounds and everything. You are on a boat. It's often raining outside and stuff. There's a lot of thunder, and it has the atmosphere as well.
Yeah, I started it yesterday, and I think I'm on floor 3 or 4.
Okay,
but I really like the. I've always been a fan of the. Like the juxtaposition between super colorful cartoony and then like a lot of darkness wrapped in it too. You might, sure. You've got this quippy, well, we won't call him Dale Cooper because there is no Dale Cooper other than Dale Cooper, but sure. You got this like kind of private eye type, you know, not bumbly, but just kind of quippy against the these gurgles and these sort of monsters with these protruding, you know, teeth from their belly and all this crazy atmosphere. I always think that's kind of a fun combination.
Yeah, he's basically our 40s noir detective.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not from the 40s. He's from now, but he acts like he's like that kind of guy. We also have like, well, basically at the beginning of the game, you choose between 4 different characters you want to play as. It sounds like you chose the detective. Fargo Drexler is his name. And then, we've also got like a guy who is an ex-Yakuza guy on the run. And he basically hopped aboard this cruise ship to get away from being found by the Yakuza who were after him. And, you know, found himself in a worse situation. Then there's like Vivian, who's like just a cute gamer girl. Who's like,
that's who I've been playing. Yeah.
What do you think of her?
I like her. I like that she can throw her controller.
Yeah, I almost picked her because of that particular trait, you know. And I'm like, you know what? It dumped me on the detective. I'll just start with him and see if I want to, you know, do something different later. But that sounds fun.
Yeah,
like super the ability well. To stun them with that controller is just, it's so good. That's every gamer's dream, is just to want to be able to throw a controller at somebody and stun the shit out of them, make them stop whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I kind of like the little joke I threw in there that her favorite game is 2 Weeks. It's TUWEKS, which, you know. 2 weeks means something else that is a very popular game that isn't quite still the same either. Fortnite, if you don't know. Uh-huh. A Fortnite is 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. It is.
Fortnite. Yeah.
Yes.
Very nice. Yes, you heard it here first, everybody. Yeah.
So that's what 2 weeks is.
That's a good Easter egg.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then the fourth character was a ton of fun to record. She's like a basically a 70s disco star. She's like the lounge singer of the Hope. The Hope is the name of the ship. And she was actually the person who did the VO for her is actually like a legitimate pop star in Hungary.
Out of
Ghana. She's from Ghana. She's Ghana/Hungarian, which is an interesting combo. Yeah. But she was a lot of fun to work with, and she's got a lot of spunk and attitude. I really had a blast working with her in the sound booth.
Were you hands-on with a lot of the voice actors?
Yeah. You know, we did kind of a mix. We have a booth in Hungary in our studio. We actually have a booth, and you know, I have gone out there in the past, like for Operencia, I was there personally, but for these, I was here in my office in New York, and woke up at like 3 a.m. every day to help do these voice sessions. it's a 6-hour time difference. So they get started 9 or 10 in the morning in Budapest, and it's very early here. But I would basically assist the voice director that was on hand there to, do our voices. It was kind of a big deal for us to record the voices for this game, because I don't think I even expected us to early on. I think a lot of games of this type, you know, you get the words on the screen, and you know, that's maybe enough, but I do think it adds a lot of personality if you're able to get some good voice actors in there to just add some more flavor to things,
bring some life to the script.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was a surprise to hear him. Actually, it's like you said, you wouldn't have expected. You don't normally expect VO in a game like this.
Yeah, so,
very cool. Yeah. So what did you, you probably did the writing for it. What was your role in this game compared to Operencia? Like
actually,
you wrote
I came in on this game pretty late, and there was the people who had written the script before weren't on the project anymore. So, so basically I would call myself a story editor on this game. I did write some things, but you know, most of what I wrote was like weapons descriptions and, you know, like, the UI kind of things that aren't
important
as exciting.
Stuff too.
Yeah, of course it is. I did write some characters or, you know, changed a few things here and there that was there. Just like an editor would do, but,
it's the best edit you made in the game.
Wow. I don't know. There's a character. This was the most fun for me just based on my own personal interests, but there's a character, named Mel, for Melanie, it's a girl. There's a part where, like, I think the line was like, do you like comic books or something? And cause she loves comic books. So, you know, there's some kind of like generic language about being a comic book fan. So, you know, being a huge comic book fan myself, I made it more specific. you know, like you've got like in the game, one of the things that you do is you go up to these survivors, you'll find them throughout the ship, and there's these conversation trees, and you have to basically say the right things to get them to like you. And once they get to like you, they'll come with you and fight beside you. But if you say the wrong things, then they won't like you, and you'll just have to keep trying, come back later, that kind of thing. But like, you know, the way you appeal to her is, you know, she's like, do you like comic books? And one of the things you can say is, yeah, what's on your pull list? You know, a pull list, for those who don't know,
yeah,
is every Wednesday you go to the comic book store, and the nice comic book shop owner keeps some aside for you so they don't sell out. And that is your pull list. They pull the things on your list, your comics.
That's
awesome.
That's when you have good friends who work in good places.
Yeah, you know, that's just a general comic book shop owner thing to do. But yeah, if you're really into that sort of thing, I'm actually more honestly a more of a digital comics reader these days, just for space reasons. but yeah, you know, just little touches like that.
I still have my Ninja Turtle Archie comics somewhere in my house.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I had an early, I guess, Eastman and Laird, right? Is that mm-hmm. Turtles?
Not the Archie.
Not the Archie ones. Yeah.
The Archie ones were an adaptation of the show. Well, they were the show's universe, and they kind of adapted the TV show a little bit, and then they would do their own thing too.
I have an old one, and I don't know where. It's also probably in the same box with my EGMs in my parents' attic.
Nice.
Which was not mentioned on the show, but you guys know about that box full of EGMs.
It's a good box.
That's fine.
Oh my
god. No, it sounds fun. This I'm really enjoying the game so far. I'm kind of this is a big strategy time. You guys might know that the gear with the Gears Tactics just came out, and there's a new Gears Tactics.
What's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there like a franchise called Gears? Really? yeah.
Believe it or not. This is so different. This plays different than so many of the other ones that I've played before. I it reminds me of this one there was this one for DS. It was a Tom Clancy strategy game, tile-based strategy game, and I can't remember what it was called, but it had more free movement, like this does, where you could sort of move around until you're engaged, which I kind of appreciate. It's very different. It's very helpful. But yeah, and the point system really, you know, being tied to movement and stuff like that. There's a lot of things in here that I think are really, original. Was there a lot of
survival? Yeah. I mean, I think the thing kind of sets it apart is just like, there's like little bits of different genres, you know, like we have survival too. You know, just managing, you only have like so many slots for your weapons and your bandages and that sort of, and armor and that sort of thing. Armor being like life preservers and stuff, especially early on. Cause it's kind of real world stuff that you would find on a ship. Although there are a lot of firearms and You know, stuff like that. But, you know, you'll throw stuff. There's darts to throw. There's like, I think you get a baseball at some point that you can use as a weapon. It's a lot of, you know, there are blades of many types. There are guns, but there's also just kind of fun weapons, that you can use. But, you know, they all have like a certain amount of, uses, and, you know, you might have like 15 times you can use this one weapon that's really powerful. So you have to decide, like, is it worth the 12 hit points I'm going to get with this one? Or should I just use my, should I just punch them for 4 hit points? You know, depending on what your situation is. And then, you know, you go back, after you complete a level, a deck, as we call them, because it's a ship, you will likely have to repair your weapons. And sometimes that actually doesn't work out so well. Sometimes because you aren't leveled up enough, you don't have the skills to properly.
I lost, fix your weapon, lost a good and, pipe wrench that
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's going to happen. But you know, there's definitely plenty of things to pick up. So there's always something out there. It may not be as good as what you lost, but you know, it's you got to decide like what's going to go in these limited slots that I have.
It encourages you to change stuff out regularly. I mean, I'm a hoarder. Absolutely. in games. So I slot everything in, and then all of a sudden I hit a wall and I was like, okay, what am I going to drop? Because I have to drop something. Yep. And then I realized that things change out so frequently that it really doesn't matter. I will say, though, I'm a fan of that broken bottle. That is my baby. That's that guy. gosh. One the point really
is OP.
Harpoon's pretty rad. I did pick that up before I stopped last night. So
I wish I had more than 3 hits on it, but those 3 hits, holy crap.
Yeah. I need to experiment with the traps. Like, I got girly to make me some traps, but I didn't decide to take them with me and try them out. So I need to.
I couldn't figure out how to use them. I had bear traps, and I didn't know if I had to drop them. I tried hitting A to use them, and I didn't know how. I guess the game could use a little bit more in the way of tutorials when it comes to some things.
Okay.
Like, seriously, how do you use traps?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've actually used a trap, but I think it is just a matter of putting it in your inventory and pressing a button to leave it somewhere.
I could not figure it out. I had 3 of them, and
sorry to hear that.
Maybe okay. It was just maybe I couldn't do it in the area that I was in, possibly.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm bad at video games.
Oh my god, me too. We should rename the podcast.
Oh, but I'm actually impressed. You guys have all seemed to have played it for at least for a couple hours anyway.
Yeah, I got it.
I was playing it before the show. It's paused right now.
Last night, I jumped in after work and got an hour or two in, so I just want to get my feet wet. It just looks like it's the aesthetic I like. It's the kind of game that I like too. So I'm like, I got to spend a little bit, and it's you guys, so yeah, I want to get some time in with it. But I will say, definitely make sure you aim correctly before you throw a Molotov. That was a bad end. I threw it the opposite direction of the baddie, bounced the wall and landed right on top of my head, left me with 3 HP, and then that was the end of it. But it was
I am proud of you, Grant.
Well, the thing is that it's a hard game, but it wasn't hard enough for you, so you wanted to make it harder on yourself by reducing your hit points. I get it. I hear you.
It was a little yeah, cold.
Self-imposed hard mode.
Yeah, totally. What difficulty did you guys choose?
Normal.
Crybaby mode.
I would absolutely expect everyone to start out playing normal, because normal still isn't very nice, and they only get meaner with the other two modes.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, that's where the hardcore roguelike stuff really sets in, like in the harder difficulties.
Yeah, that's the stuff. See, you guys went the fast food soft drink size way of difficulty naming, which was, you know, like large, giant, and oh my god. So that was scary to me. So I had to go for.
I forget. It's normals first, right? And yes. Is it insane? Is that our hardest one? I want to say.
I can't remember.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the game's going to kick your butt. Even on normal, I think most people are going to cruise through maybe the first 7 or 8 levels, mostly on normal. Then it starts getting really tough.
Yeah, I can see a difficulty spike coming in the future. I've been replaying floors to kind of, I don't know, grind, I guess.
Sure. Yeah,
it gets easier when you know how to set a trap, or so I've been told.
I would imagine that it is. Cole, did you figure out how to set a trap? What did I miss?
I don't know. I think I was just dropping them on the floor. I don't know if they were even doing any good. I didn't care as long as things died and I got to go on. When in doubt, whack the shit out of it with a pipe and you call it a day.
Hey, whatever works.
Yeah, that was throwing my controller at them left, right, and center. I don't know what else was working. I was just happy to do that. Clear a whole room with my controller.
Oh, Lord. So what were some of the challenges in bringing the game from Apple Arcade to consoles?
It was always envisioned as being a console and PC game as well. So it was actually just as much a challenge to bring it to Apple Arcade. We did obviously primarily design it for Apple Arcade, and it's very good in Apple Arcade, and it's very touch friendly. You know, you can move the camera around, zoom in and stuff, just how you would expect to do on Apple. But sorry, excuse me,
lost my voice. Okay, over there.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't talked a whole lot lately, just in general, just because of
take a shot of whiskey, it'll help.
But yeah, so but in terms of bringing it to consoles and everything, you know, we always had it in mind. So it really wasn't that hard, I guess. You know, it was something. There are other games like this that have similar control schemes that we would use as well. It's never not a challenge, but it's not like we weren't prepared for it.
That makes sense.
Very cool. Very cool. When did Operencia come out last year? Was it earlier in the year? I'm trying to remember.
Operencia came out on Xbox and Epic Game Store late last March. And
it was like March 17th or something. I know it was right around my 29th, birthday.
I want to say it was very late in March. It was like the last day you could release a game in March or whatever. And then it's actually out on everything else pretty much now as well.
Yeah. So, yeah. Noticed. Yeah. I was curious about the because I mean, you released that, and then this came out not long after that for kind of the early Apple Arcade stuff.
Well, that's the thing is at Zen we actually have 4 development teams, and those are completely different teams, and Pinball is a completely different team. When you say Zen Studios is making something that isn't Pinball, it's like we literally have teams that have nothing to do with Pinball.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the Operencia team is different than the Castle Storm team is different than the Dreadnautical team. And, you know, we're all, working on other projects to be announced at some point as well. So.
I was waiting for you to slip and just be like, and then there's this other team. And oh, shit, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Right. We have 4 different teams. And so it's not like what we did on Operencia, stepped on the feet or interfered with Dreadnautical development. Occasionally the individual people will cross over, if some team needs an extra hand or whatever. But for the most part, they're very distinct teams.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. And Operencia, like you said, came out, last month or so, something like that?
Yeah, about a month ago
it came out. Switch.
Yeah, it came out at the end of March on Switch, PS4, Steam, and GOG. Am I forgetting something? I think that's it.
Yeah, people the review seems to be reviewing really well. It was great to see because it's been a while since it originally came out, but a lot of Switch people really seem to like it and getting a lot of activity on Steam.
So. Yeah, we're super proud of it. You know, if you are the type of person who enjoyed old school games like Wizardry, Bard's Tale, Eye of the Beholder. You know, Operencia is basically just a kind of more modern take on that, but still holds on to some old school things like grid-based movement, which, you know, a lot of modern gamers were finding had never experienced grid-based movement, and it confuses them at first until they get used to it. But I think most people get used to it. Some aren't really into it, but yeah, the, you know, grid, but instead of just being grid-based movement, it's grid-based movement where you can look around and see everything around you. So, you know, it's just like a bunch of modern touches like that, and it's, it, you know, our artists did a beautiful job of bringing the world to life. It's got a lot of voice acting and stuff in it that you didn't really get in that sort of game. So yeah, it's fun to, you know, I played Wizardry a lot when I was a kid. And it was fun to just like make a game like that, but make it also a little bit Final Fantasy too, you know?
Yeah. Did you happen to play Doom RPG?
No, I've heard about it. I have never played Doom RPG though.
It was it was pre-smartphone mobile game?
Yeah, wasn't it? Huh. Yeah, that's
what I was thought. So awesome. It's just what it's kind of what you're describing. It's basically Doom in a dungeon crawler, with right. Tile grid-based movement, first person. I'm sure it's emulatable or has been recreated in some way, but for the Doom fans out there, you may not know of that one. Also one that I think surprised a lot of people, and then people got into it and played it a little bit and realized how fun that kind of first-person gameplay actually is. People aren't used to it. You don't see this very often, what you guys did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, the most comparable modern examples, Bard's Tale 4 recently, Etrian Odyssey is probably, in terms of like series that kind of keep going, that's probably the most comparable thing. But yeah, that particular type of game is not really that well represented these days, which is why we wanted to do it.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
I have a question. I'm not sure if this could be addressed or not, but Operencia released on Xbox Game Pass. Dreadnautical didn't. Was there any talk of bringing it to Xbox Game Pass, or is that handled on a pay scale above you?
Yeah, I was gonna say that's more of a Mel question. I actually don't know that.
Mel, I always wondered
how
that stuff
Mel worked. is our COO. Yeah. I did not have anything to do with the businessy stuff on either game, so I don't know what to tell you there. Yeah.
So what is next for Zen Studios? What's going on? What is coming up on the radar? I know you mentioned Castle Storm 2. What else?
Yeah, well, Castle Storm 2 is definitely the next like non-pinball thing. Yeah, we're doing a lot of polish on that right now. There's no announced release date. You know, these days it's a little volatile in terms of release dates, but it should be this year. It should definitely be this year. It will be this year. Absolutely. So yeah, Castle Storm 2, you know, takes pretty much everything we did in the first Castle Storm, which, if you don't know, kind of combined like projectile combat of Angry Birds with like hack and slash with like tower defense. It's like a cool mishmash of genres. And then in this one, Castle Storm 2, we're adding like a whole like 4X strategy game on top of it. So Ooh. you have to conquer an entire map. And then like when you get to a castle to take over so that you can claim that part of the map, then you do the kind of traditional Castle Storm fight from the first game. So it's as much a strategy game as it is just like an action strategy game, I guess you could call the normal traditional gameplay. And you know, there's a lot of fun stuff we did with the script. It's very kind of Monty Python-esque.
Nice. You're speaking my language.
Yeah. You know, not exactly Monty Python, but it there are definitely some Monty Python inspired things there for sure. So it is a it's like a medieval fantasy world that doesn't take itself too seriously. You know,
and what platforms are you guys bringing that one to?
Yeah, that's pretty much everything. So yeah, Xbox, PS4, Switch, PC via the Epic Game Store. So I think that's it. Yeah. So that is this year. and then, we're still, of course, working on more pinball. I can't tell you what at the moment, but,
Nothing's been announced for pinball.
There is one thing that's been announced
for pinball. Yeah, you guys are partnering with Arcade 1UP with those.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Those physical machines. Joe, have you seen these?
True. No, I haven't.
Yes. They're so rad. They're like 3/4 size. Arcade 1UP. They make the those like kind of somewhat flimsy and small but amazing, less expensive arcade.
I want the Ninja Turtle one.
Yeah, I want the there was one that they're doing a Star Wars one, I think.
Yeah, like I need
the Vector Star Wars. Jeez. Yeah. Well, they're doing three quarter pinball machines with, I believe, Zen's doing the guts, right? Or like
exactly. We're doing two that we've announced. Star Wars is going to have. I don't know if they've announced how many tables yet, so I'm not going to say. But Star Wars is going to, we have a bunch of Star Wars pinball tables. So this is going to be like an actual digital pinball table in your house with Star Wars pinball. And then there's also a Williams one. So, we do a lot of the Williams Bally classic pinball games as well. So that is going to have some pinball tables on that one as well. So that's two. But I haven't actually seen one in the flesh myself other than YouTube videos and stuff coverage. But CES, it went over really well. Like everyone loved it. So I'm not sure what the release date is on those. But
That's changed. I mean, now you're talking about like physical manufacturing. Yeah, I think originally it was supposed to be early summer. That's not happening. I don't know what you guys have got. I'm sure it's mostly in their hands at this point.
Yeah, it's mostly Arcade 1UP in their hands. So, they would be the ones to ask about release dates and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm incredibly excited for that.
Is the playfield just going to be a giant screen?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I think it has Nudge built in to it.
Yep, I think so.
I'll send you a link here, Joe, so you can check it out. But it's pretty awesome. Damn, I want one.
Badass. Well, something else I don't have room for in my house. Yeah.
At least they're smaller, so
true.
Yeah. Make the room. It should be pretty great. Definitely looking forward to that. And of course we have other things in the works that just aren't ready to announce yet, but
you guys are always busy over there, Zen. You're always busy.
Yeah.
Have anything that Grant's working with you on yet?
I don't believe so, unfortunately.
Grant, you got to work harder. You got to make this happen.
I'm working on Operencia 4. It'll be out 2028. Nice. So it's the Xbox 4Z, where it's the one you just put the chip in your brain and you're in there. It's great. It's good stuff.
Does Zen have any dev kits for PS5 and Series X yet? Is anything going on behind the scenes there that you're able to talk about?
I have not been in the studio in a while, so
That sounds like a cop out for pushing the uncomfortable button. I'm uncomfortable.
I think I've heard things, but I would not want to report back to you unless I knew the exact correct answer there. So
makes sense. I'm just curious to know if we're going to see.
No, they can't tell us anything about them.
Probably.
The robots are coming.
The robots. The giant metallic robots that stand outside your window and shoot you if you tell trade secrets.
Oh my lord! Hey Chris, what are you playing these days? What are you jamming on?
My main game is Diaper Change 2020.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is that a VR game or is that like a?
It is RR. It is real.
Oh, it's RR.
Yeah.
Definitely handheld, right? Smell-o-vision.
I really haven't played much in the past couple of weeks except for just work related stuff, but a little Animal Crossing. I haven't checked on my town since my daughter was born, so it's probably
your villagers hate you.
Well,
at least you could sell the weeds now.
Was could you not before?
No, weeds. You would just pull them. This is the first game where you actually pick.
Okay. I thought you meant in this game. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I definitely sold plenty of weeds, plural.
A weeds dealer.
Yeah. but you know, I bought a couple things that I haven't gotten around to playing yet. Animal Crossing would be the most recent thing that I've actually like put any real time into.
What games are you looking forward to staring at longingly on your shelf?
I think honestly, I'm mainly looking forward to what the next generation has to offer at this point. I'm interested in, you know, Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima, but it's like I'm kind of just really interested, like what the next gen is going to be all about, beyond what we already know.
I know Xbox said they're going to be holding an event on their Inside Xbox on May 7th, showing off some gameplay footage of Series X. So maybe we'll see something new there.
Oh yeah, great. Yeah, you know, I'm a big comic book fan too, so I am looking forward to seeing what Avengers is all about whenever we see that for real. You know, it's kind of getting pushed back, but I'm looking forward to that. I have a humongous backlog right now I really need to get to.
Oh man, well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. I don't want to take up too much of your day. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we let you get going? Hello?
Take that as a...
Did you lose me? Hello?
Nope. Oh, there you are.
There it is.
Okay.
I was like, oh God, he's kicking me off. Fuck this guy.
I heard you guys fine. I don't know what happened there. But yeah, Dreadnautical, Operencia, Castle Storm 2 coming soon. Pretty much every, whatever your console or PC of choice is, they're available. You can follow Zen Studios on Twitter at Zen_Studios. You can follow me if you want at CBAKE76, CBAKE76. I think that's plenty of plugs for you.
Chris, we love having you on. Grant, we love having you on as well. I don't know, anything else you guys want to talk about, or should we wrap
up? Nobody loves having me on? Wait a second.
Well, Cole, you're not going anywhere. You're sticking around the rest of the show.
Oh, fuck.
You can't escape.
I can never leave.
The Dreadnautical of podcasts.
Oh.
Yeah, and now I'm determined.
I don't get the luxury of having amnesia the next time I wake up and have to do it.
Chris, still got to figure out who the Simpsons character was. Figure out who the Simpsons character was.
I spent the whole first half of the show Googling it, and then I ended up looking around on Pinterest because I was like, whatever.
So glad that you're heavily involved with the show, Cole.
I can multitask. I have multiple screens on my super amazing computer. Thank you.
So do I, and I can't use them because it'll explode.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Come on, Trump money. I'm waiting for you. Let's go. We got to fix a roof and hopefully buy a computer. Oh, man. But yeah. All right. Chris, Grant, thank you both for being here. Always a pleasure having the two of you on. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more show. Chris, do you have any final words to end the interview?
The pressure. Nothing.
Grant, what about you?
Ball squad forever.
That's all I got. Does that work? I think yes. Chris is in the ball squad. I mean, he's technically in the ball squad. He's you know,
he's part of the
ball squad by proxy. Okay.
By proxy, yeah.
I'll do it. Sure.
Proxy ball squad
by proxy. Yeah. Proxy ball squad.
Ball squad. Ball squad. Go for the skill shot, it's a house ball.
House ball.
Ball squad. Ball squad.
shoot the green, lock 'em up, jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mal is the Zen, Joe with the milky voice, Stem is the Uber fan. Ball squad. It's a ball squad.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another big thanks to Chris and Grant for hanging out with us. Those two guys are pretty good guys.
Yeah, it was a good interview. It's good to have them around.
I like having the Zen guys on. They're good people, and they treat us well.
Yes.
So, good stuff.
Indeed.
And then yeah. Grant was here.
Yeah. You know what? The best part of that is that I don't have to talk too much. I can just be like, Yeah. Every so often, and y'all are good. You just keep going. You don't need me.
Yeah, Grant's got some good questions. He's a good talkative fellow. He's a good hand. To have
well,
on the show.
New co-host. Bye.
Yeah, pretty much. No, he's a musician and he has a real life.
That's horrible.
I know.
Why would anybody want one of those?
I don't know. People are crazy.
Yep. Next.
Next. We should probably get into the news. There was a fair amount of news that happened this week. Aki is jumping the gun in chat, screaming, new AC game, yay. And no, not Animal Crossing. Ubisoft announced Assassin's Creed Valhalla for a fall 2020 release.
And, holiday 2020.
Well, yeah. I go with fall, whatever. Holiday 2020 release. They said 15 studios are working on this game.
Goddamn.
That is a lot of studios.
I worked on the others. Like, I know they had, I think they had 7 working on The Division 2.
I mean, that's a lot there, but so, for 15 studios working on the game. I didn't watch the teaser yet. I know I'm slacking, but I did see some stills of it. I read a little bit of the information and I saw the collector's edition for it, which, oh my God, I need.
Yes.
And if Ashley can hear me, she is probably planning to murder me as I say that.
Where are you going to put a statue?
I can slide that one over a little bit. I could move that one a little bit over. It could fit right in the middle there if I move that picture somewhere else.
What is that a picture of?
Nothing important. No, it's a picture my sister took at a concert that we went to.
Well, see. It is a nice collector's edition, though.
Oh, it is sexy looking. It is gorgeous looking. And the steel book in there. Oh, it's all blue and pretty.
So I don't pretty. Like the color blue. So I'm just like, yeah, it's nice and carry on.
Well, I like the color blue because I'm a normal human being.
I don't have the vitriol for blue that I have for green, but I just don't feel obliged to like blue either.
Yeah, I'm pointing out for once it's the female version of the character that's getting the statue this time around.
That is nice. That is nice. That fucking never happens either.
No, it doesn't.
Even with the Division statue, it's the male character model. I was like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, now is your time to shine as the female character is getting the statue. Supposed to be like a good foot tall statue.
Nice.
12-inch, 12-13-inch, somewhere in that neck of the woods. Yeah. It looks to be a collector's edition. And they confirmed through, I believe, Amazon and Best Buy's website that the Xbox One version will have smart delivery. So you will get the Series X version for free once
That's
you upgrade.
That's fantastic.
Which I'm assuming you'll just pop the Xbox One disc in the machine and it'll be like, oh, hey, I know what to download.
Yeah. That is nice.
Big shout out. No Time for Games just subbed for 25 months in a row. Wow. That is insane. I have a new sound clip for it. So, Purnell, take it away.
Fucking yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You will have to listen and see what you think of that one.
Yeah, god damn it. Gonna go make me listen to that. I'll have to skip ahead. How long we've been on this call for? Because I fucking hate my own voice.
We've been recording for about 5 minutes. So
all just right.
Skip like 4:30 in after the interview.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's all see. Right. What other news? Xbox announced that they'll be showing off some Series X gameplay footage during the next Inside Xbox on May 7th. We mentioned that briefly while Chris and Grant were here, but I'm excited to see what they're going to be showing off. I'm going to guess that they're going to be showing off Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, they did say it would be third party games that would be shown off.
Yeah.
So I am intrigued to see beyond just Assassin's Creed what all gets put up there.
I would love it if they kick it off and it's like Final Fantasy 14 finally coming to Xbox on the Series X.
Mm.
I'd be excited.
You might be asking too much, though. That's a tall order.
Let me dream.
Final Fantasy anything we will get to see in about 27 years.
I don't know. I think 7 Remake that we're going to see fairly soon after that year exclusivity's done.
Hope so. I know there's a lot of people looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Even David is.
Really?
Yeah, he likes Final Fantasy.
Hmm.
He's got that nostalgia attachment to Final Fantasy VII.
Hmm.
Whereas I'm like, I just want Crystal Chronicles. And I'm mad about it.
Yeah, that one's probably not happening for us.
Ever.
Yeah. Thanks,
is it on
Square.
Switch, though?
Hmm?
It's not. Is it on the Switch?
Yeah.
Fuck. I have it. I could. Oh.
See, you could still play it. You'll be fine.
I don't like to play on the Switch.
Get a Pro Controller. You'll be fine.
Ah, at least they made the buttons remappable. Stand a chance in hell now.
Oh, God. What are we going to do with you? Some other news, games with gold and PlayStation Plus lineups for May have both been announced.
Uh-huh.
To the wild screaming adulation of gamers everywhere.
Everybody is mad.
Yeah, Xbox came first and people were pissed.
Yeah.
And then PlayStation seized on an opportunity and announced a worse lineup.
Damn.
On the surface, they're not awful lineups. When you look at everything that's there, on Xbox One, we're getting V-Rally 4, which is still a $60 game.
Yeah.
So that's nifty. I mean, it's way overpriced. It should be like 40 tops, but still, you know, that's a full price game. And then Warhammer 40K Inquisitor Martyr, which I thought was a really solid game.
I can't remember if that's one of them I played.
I believe so. I believe you covered that one with me.
We've played quite a few of them at this point, and they all just kind of blend together now.
It's very Diablo-like.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there's people that are going to enjoy them. My argument with it is that is a niche game type.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of not for everybody. But,
I think Microsoft has been giving us too many racing games, that's for sure.
Yeah, I could argue that as well. But my complaints that, you know, Warhammer might be niche is it's going to get blown out of the water here in a second. So we'll get to that.
Yeah. And then on the Xbox 360 side of things, Sensible World of Soccer and Overlord 2. Overlord 2, I think, is a solid game. Sensible World of Soccer, I'm not going to shit talk because I didn't own it, and I finally got a free game out of Games with Gold, so I'm taking it.
Sensible World of Soccer. Okay.
Yes.
I don't even know how to come up with anything for that one. It's just... Next!
$10 arcade soccer title. But again, I did not own it, so I finally got myself a free game through Games with Gold.
GG.
And I am going to take it, and I will be proud of it, and I'm going to download it, and I'm going to pretend I'm going to play it, but I will never touch it.
You will never touch it, but never. You have it, and that's what matters.
Yes, that is what matters. No Time for Games saying, I wanted Unsensible World of Crockett. I'm guessing cricket.
Yeah.
Or croquet.
I thought you had said that wrong. Oh, yeah, maybe croquet.
I don't know if cricket or croquet.
Either one is sufficient for the joke.
Yes, but Crockett didn't work.
No.
No.
I thought you had made the crochet. That's crochet, and that's a whole different bag of tricks.
I don't know how to spell it. Oh, my Lord. Gotta love it. PlayStation Plus announced their games as well, and again, they had such an opportunity to just drop an incredible lineup and destroy Xbox this month.
They could have dropped the most mediocre lineup and destroyed Xbox.
But instead, we get City Skylines and Farming Simulator 19.
So, you know how I said that Inquisitor was niche? Here's the thing. City Skylines is a fantastic simulator. Farming Simulator 19 is fantastic for what it is as a simulator. Neither of those games are going to apply to anybody outside of my household. Like, if we had PlayStation, we'd both be like, fuck yeah, I'm down. Thanks. I'd be happy. He'd be happy. It'd be good. Most people are not going to A, have the time commitment, B, have the genre interest, or C, have the fucks to give.
Yeah, like City Skylines, I can understand. Farming Sim, I will never understand as a free game. No. It's just, it's too small of a market. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the market for farming games has exploded recently, and this is...
There is an esports league.
Is there?
Yeah.
That doesn't shock me.
So, you know, maybe they're trying to lure more people into the esports league for
possible.
It. And that's the whole gig there.
Someone pointed out another negative is the fact that they're both part of PlayStation Now.
Oh, no, that's garbage.
So if you subscribe to PS Now, you're getting two games that, hey, you already have access to. So, dish.
Well, then.
If you have to pick a winner, I think Xbox wins based on the fact that you get four games instead of two. And Warhammer was pretty solid, so I'm giving them credit for that. Yeah, Jordan pointing out at least PlayStation users got Journey and Uncharted for free. Yeah, that was a great month for the handful of people who didn't already own either of those games. I don't know. Some more Sony news. Sony announced new release dates for The Last of Us Part 2 and The Ghosts of Tsushima, with The Last of Us Part 2 going to be releasing June 19th and Ghosts of Tsushima releasing July 17th. Sony also confirmed that Last of Us 2 is going to be a two-disc game taking up 100 gig of space minimum.
Wow.
Holy hell. Why are games getting so goddamn big?
It's a good question. I don't know. I wonder how many people are going to bother since the whole leak of The Last of Us 2. Like, obviously, The Last of Us is a loved franchise on PlayStation, and so, like, pretty much anybody that bought a PlayStation for the exclusives are, like, they've got it. You know, they're going to buy it. But yeah. will it take a hit otherwise from people leaking it?
I really don't think the leaks are going to hurt the game at all. I think people are still going to play it to see if it, A, holds up to what everyone's expecting it to be, which it's Naughty Dog, so I fully expect it's going to hold up to and live up to what everyone is expecting of it.
Yeah.
Number two, they're going to see if the leaks are true and whether or not anything has been changed in between.
Yeah.
Because the way Naughty Dog made it seem in their statement, they said that they're still hoping to be able to surprise people. So it makes me think that they might be either, you know, beta line storylines that were in there that may have been changed, or maybe they're going to rewrite the ending based on some of the feedback they've gotten from the leak. Obviously, we're not going to talk about the leak on the show and talk about what was in there. I had something small spoiled for me. Tim mentioned on the last episode he had something small spoiled for him, which they could be wrong. We may have just been fed false information. Either way, it's a dick move, so don't spoil the game for people.
Yep. I haven't played any of them, played either of them, obviously, not the second one, but I didn't look up any of the spoiler stuff. I don't know. I'm not spoiling anybody. But it's a dick move.
No. Jordan's saying that he's kind of deflated on the game and wished Redbox still rented games, because I definitely rent it.
Does Redbox not rent games anymore?
No. Too many people were stealing them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, use a prepaid gift card, rent a game, and just never return it.
Wow.
Yeah, there were a lot of assholes out there. They ruined it for everyone.
That is a thing.
Even still, it's going to be a two-disc game, so.
True.
I don't know how that stuff would work on Redbox. Gamefly, I imagine they'll send you just both discs. But Redbox, do they have two-disc cases?
No. I seem to remember there being something two disc once that David and I wanted to rent, and we had to pay for the discs separately.
Oh man, that sucks.
And I remember just being like, fuck it, and we just got the multiplayer disc and left the just to try it out, see if we cared to even buy it, but
hey, whatever works, I guess.
I can't remember what it was, but it was two disc, and campaign was on one, multiplayer was on the other, and we were just like, fuck it. Might have been a Medal of Honor game or something like that. Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh, some other news. Moving Out was a surprise launch to Xbox Game Pass this week, alongside the scheduled releases of Gears Tactics on the PC, and then Levelhead, Hyperdot, and Streets of Rage 4 all launched on Game Pass, or all released or became available on Game Pass. Hyperdot was already out. The others launched.
Yeah. That's a pretty good little lineup to just decide to be like, hey, here you go.
Yeah, the Game Pass lineup is no joke. Gears Tactics, Levelhead, and Streets of Rage right there. Mm-hmm. And then Moving Out. Surprise.
Yeah. It'll keep you busy.
I love it. I love surprise launches.
Stay home, play games.
Yeah, pretty much. Some bad news, though. Some games are leaving Game Pass. Don't know when they're leaving. Probably the middle of the month, as they usually do. The new games that showed up are, well, Black Desert was confirmed to be leaving on the 15th. But the rest of the games, probably around the same date. There's Doom, Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, Metal Gear Survive, The Banner Saga, Lego Ninjago movie video game, and Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus.
Ah, shit. I wanted to play that in a good time.
Well, you still have time to play it.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. You got 2 weeks.
Nah. Yeah, but my whole house is torn apart, man.
Bah.
Bah. I've been trying to orchestrate buying paint over the phone. Do you know how chaotic my life has been these last couple weeks? I don't got time for anything.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to buy paint over a phone call.
Like, matching up what I'm seeing on the virtual painter app.
Oh, you're on an app? That's not that bad.
Well, you could see the color. I have it on the computer where, like, I can look up the colors. But then my husband's like, oh, I tried to get the color that you wanted, and they told me their machine was out of black. And I'm like, fuck. How do you just run out of black pigment? Here, I got some in my drawer. Come get this and put in it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I didn't know that it could be so much drama to be like, I just want a 5-gallon bucket of paint. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Fuss about it on the podcast.
Speaking of dicks, last bit of news I have is that Google and EA are partnering up. EA is going to be bringing 5 titles to Stadia, with Jedi Fallen Order, FIFA, and Madden set to launch later this year. Is this a good move for Stadia, or does this scream too little too late?
Too little too late, and I also fully expected it when you said EA. I was like, oh, five sports games.
I mean, you know, Jedi Fallen Order's a big title, Madden's a big title, FIFA's a big title. There's going to be an audience for those games there.
But is the audience that's going to be there for those games, are they not already going to have those games elsewhere?
Yeah, true. Very true.
I think that's the biggest thing, that and the horrible ass input lag. that Stadia is like, it's biggest kick in the ass right now is that it doesn't have anything to wow you into it. Like, give me a reason to play your shit other than I can play it on a garbage PC.
Yeah.
Because most people are either locked into a console of some variety of another, or got a PC that can handle playing games. If you're into games, you've already put up that capital to be into games. And then it kind of feels like Stadia is just out there like, well, come give us a try. We're for casuals. And we're like, no.
Have you tried Stadia yet? I know you signed up for it to try. No, but I need to go
cancel that shit before it gets charged to my car.
Yeah, the first thing I did was cancel the auto renewal. That was the immediate first thing I did.
I think I did, but I need to go make sure.
I thought you wanted to try, what was it, Guilt?
Yeah, and again, time, but, you know, I'm hoping things are a little better next week when the kids are not locked down to school schedules.
Mm.
Because that's been, like, the hardest part of all this is my routine was get up at 5 a.m., everybody's gone by 7:30, and I was alone for the rest of the day until 5 p.m. And now it's like, no, everybody's here all the time. I no longer have time to just sit and paint or play games or hang out in my garden, play real life Animal Crossing. I can't do that shit anymore because somebody has a Zoom meeting. Somebody needs, you know, to use one of the computers to take a test. I have to administer tests and like, fuck am I paying my taxes for, man? Over here being mom and teacher, and this is garbage. send these shits back to school. God damn.
Goddamn kids.
Yeah. Can't have this. It's also thoroughly fucked up my day night schedule too, because now like to get anything done.
Yeah, my day night schedule's been completely wrecked. I am so tired right now. I just want to sleep, and it's 9 o'clock.
See, the problem for me is, like, I'm only just now feeling awake because I've been staying up till, like, 4 and 5 in the morning because if I'm going to get shit done with the kids around, then I have to wait till they're in bed and I have to wait for D to go to bed. And then I'm like, okay, I can finally stretch out my paints or put my feet up and play a game without anybody interrupting me every 5 minutes. And then I get into it and then I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, it's 4 a.m. and now I'm going to go to bed, get up at 9 to get everybody started with their fucking schoolwork shit again. Can't function like this.
Oh, God.
It's terrible and very bad and not good. And I want my kids to go back to school.
It's terrible, very bad, and not good. Gotcha. Yeah. just recapping that to make sure I had all the info correct.
I just wanna be able to sit down and draw dicks without having to worry about somebody coming out of their room and seeing what I'm doing.
Mother.
What a lovely unicorn horn you've drawn. Jesus. I wanna be an artist just like you someday.
Oh, God. All right. Well, that's all I had for news. Is any news you want to talk about, or should we dive into the reviews?
Oh, let's do reviews. I'm going to be sad.
Why are you going to be sad?
Because Root Beer is my jam said I sounded like Trump.
Oh, no.
It hurts my heart. A little Oh, liberal redneck bleeding heart can't take that kind of bullshit.
Although I won't lie, I would absolutely love it if Trump started talking and your voice came out. I think that would be pretty sweet.
I don't know that my voice quite coordinates with that pursed lip look of his. I smile too much, rednecks. Extensive vocabulary like Henry Beer said, excuse me, sir, but I abhor your $5.
You a
word.
Whore? What? A whore?
A bore. Somebody once
I like whores. Mocked me,
was like, in one breath you say y'all, and the next you say abhorrent. I was like, what? I'm allowed to talk funny and still use proper words. I can speak good.
I make word.
Yeah, I could speak in English. I don't know what the fuck they thought I was gonna say there, but I might stutter and fuck up a lot on the podcast because my mouth gets ahead of my brain. But
proud of you.
But I can't speak well and properly. Sometimes.
Yeah, we'll find out. Because you got a bunch of games to talk about. You ready?
I do. Let's talk about some games.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Stranded Deep, developed by Fun Labs and Beam Team Games, published by Beam Team Games. Released April 21st on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Take the role of a plane crash survivor stranded somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. Experience terrifying encounters both above and below an endless environment. Come face to face with some of the most life-threatening scenarios that will result in a different experience each time you play. Cole, tell us about Stranded Deep.
So, Stranded Deep gives you the option to start off with your choice of a male or female character. Obviously, I chose female. There's no advantage. Just pick your character model. You choose between male or female, and then you have absolutely no control over any other aspect of them. You can't customize them in any other way. Just which body type do you want that you'll never see because it's first person. I take that back. In the plane crash scene, at one point I put the controller down and like something pushed against it, and my character's vision was turned just enough that you could almost kind of see some boob.
Ooh.
Because apparently the female shirt is unbuttoned partway for some reason that the males are not.
You have Aki's attention.
Yeah, there's this tiniest little sliver of I guess flesh, you know, hanging out there. If you get real imaginative, you'll be all right. And then you crash into the ocean in the Pacific Ocean, and you manage to swim your way out and find a life raft and raft your happy little ass over to a deserted island. While you're in the process of doing that, you may discover that there are sharks in the water and they want to be your friend. And by be your friend, I mean they want you inside of them.
Ooh. Phrasing.
They want to eat you in the not fun way.
Ooh.
Unless you're into vor, in which case, hey, you're still winning here. somebody has just gone to Google that because they don't know what it is, and I'm very sorry for what you're about to find. But yeah, anyway, the sharks are not friendly, and unless before you started the game, you picked the difficulty option to turn the shark's aggressiveness off. Your first foray into Stranded Deep, I would very much like to recommend that everybody play at least once with the sharks and the bugs turned off, because the learning curve for surviving in Stranded Deep is very high. And I'll get to the whys of that in a second. But you do have the options. One of the few options you have in this game. Can't control your sensitivity. Can't control hardly jack shit else. But you can control whether or not the sharks and the bugs eat you. So, turn them off. carry on, and you'll do at least a little okay. Once you're on the island, you're going to be tasked with using a tutorial. It'll show you how to do some of the more mundane things, like collect sticks, collect rocks, build a rudimentary weapon, all kind of important survival stuff that we see in literally every survival game. If you've played Ark or Atlas or literally anything that just has you starting off with nothing, you're already got your foot in the door on how to play. And yet, there are some quirks that make Stranded Deep just a little more difficult to get a handle on. In other survival games, usually you'll be able to spam X or Y or some kind of action button and just naturally pick things up. But in Stranded Deep, it requires you to look at something and hold the button to pick it up. That limits your speed in getting things very quickly. And so it forces you to slow down, forces you to look directly at what you want. There is no quick movement of between items or anything like that. That's kind of indicative to the game's struggles as it gets larger. The more you unlock, the more that you can craft, the more that you can pick up, the more difficult it becomes to actually navigate your inventory. Everything that you pick up gets automatically equipped. So you may find that you're walking around holding a palm frond when really you need your knife so that you can cut down a yucca plant. If you pick up a crab, then you have to go through the hassle of dropping the crab if you kill it first and then pick it up. You can't just be holding it and chuck it to get the meat. You have to put it back down on the ground and then hit it with the knife and then hold the X button. It's just a long drawn out process that's kind of unnecessarily drawn out. That continues in other ways. There was actually one issue I had where the tutorial section was like, okay, you're thirsty. You need to climb a tree and get a coconut. And I'm like, cool, down for this. Climb the tree, get the coconut. The tutorial doesn't clearly tell you how to get the coconut out of the tree. So I keep climbing these trees and I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to get the coconuts? They're not falling. They're not letting me grab them. I can't hit them with my knife because you're holding the tree, so you can't hold the knife. And so then out of frustration, I climbed down from the tree after I'd gone up through 8 different trees trying to get a coconut, following the tutorial's rule of climbing the tree and getting a coconut. I finally hit the palm tree out of frustration. I was like, this is garbage. I don't know how to get the palm or coconut. And then the tree falls and the coconut falls. And I was like, at no point did the game tell me that climbing the tree was going to be fucking useless and that I just needed to whack it with a knife. But then, oh, you've whacked it with a knife. There's a coconut. Oh, no, the coconut has some kind of coating around it. So you've got to sit and whack it with your knife some more. Now it's a coconut shell. And then you can just pick it up and drink it. Or you can turn it into a flask. And if you think you're going to get more than one drink out of a coconut, fuck you. I hope you're ready to cut down a whole lot of trees, because that's the only fucking way you're getting the goddamn coconuts that are one-time use. And you're constantly going to be thirsty. Good luck. Go find you another island, because sitting on the main one is not a plan. It's a quality of life feature more than an actual challenge to overcome. So you have your obvious hunger and thirst and things that you need to take care of. But again, like I said, the quality of life and how it balances your time spent doing tasks versus your reward for doing them is off balance. I shouldn't have to cut down a tree to get one little block on my thirst meter filled.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take 4 hours to roast a tiny little piece of crab meat over a fire. And it means that you spend an excess amount of time just trying to monitor your situation and survive versus actually progressing and experiencing the world. Which again is why I said it's very important to turn off the bugs and the sharks when you're getting started, because you need to be able to dive into the water and like actually explore things and kind of learn how you can explore before you dive into it and try to actually survive with threats around. The problem is that it's a little hard to say you're going to want to try to survive with threats around when so much effort goes into just basically getting the hang of the game. It takes a lot of the enjoyment out of the survival factors, especially for somebody who really enjoys survival games. It felt more like I was completing chores than actually doing progressive tasks.
Hmm.
Yeah. Aside from that, it looks great. I was very impressed with how it looked. It's just that I got really tired of having to chop down trees just to barely survive with the water. Another thing that's problematic is that there's not a lot of indication. There's nothing on your HUD whatsoever, besides like you're looking at an item and it tells you which button you can press to interact with it. So like if your health is low, if you're poisoned, if you're thirsty, if you're too hot, you have to pull up the character's watch because somehow their Fitbit survived the crash. And like all of your monitoring that would need to be on a HUD is done via this Fitbit. It's a neat tool. It's just that there's no external indication. And like I would have started chopping down coconut trees way in advance before I hit zero on the thirst meter. If I had known that I wasn't going to have some kind of indication to let me know, oh, you're getting thirsty, this is a problem.
No.
Like there's no, you know, no validation or indication whatsoever to make you go, oh shit, I'm thirsty. And then you just fall over dead of dehydration because you don't ever think to get a coconut. But
proud of you.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's a lot of quality of life elements that could be smoothed out. I do feel like the game probably would have benefited from being in early access a little bit, which is kind of problematic to say because it's been in early access on Steam for 5 years.
Oh, man.
Steam still doesn't have a 1.0 version, but we do. They probably could have shuffled it into game preview and given it a little bit of time.
No.
And gotten some player feedback rather than just going, yep, here you go, have some fun. Because it needed a little smoothing out.
Well, as it stands at $20, what's your verdict?
I'm going to go with kind of a hesitant try it. I don't think it's a deny. There's a lot of good things about Stranded Deep. It's just that there's a lot of quality of life and gameplay mechanics that need balance too. So I'm gonna ride with a try it on it.
All right. Next game to talk about is called The Inner Friend, developed and published by Playmind, released April 28th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Descend into an eerie world made of scattered memories and unresolved traumas and explore a nightmarish landscape where you will come face to face with childhood fears and nightmares. Cole, this one sounds happy.
No. No, it's not. I will say, though, that for a horror game, I didn't find it. I didn't fear pee. And no, I wouldn't no even fear like put it in line with psychological horror. It's just more of like, this is the kind of shit that somebody found unnerving as a kid. And they decided to make a game about it.
Nah.
I'm not sure. Like a lot of the levels that you interact with, they're reasonable. Like, okay, I could see how they're a monstrous, terrible teacher would affect how you feel about school and how you would feel as if, you know, you're being stifled or, you know, just not experiencing things in a healthy way or a healthy setting. I see how that could be like a traumatic and terrorizing thing. Not sure how we get to the point where you're running away from a monster at a barber shop, though. Like, what did the barber do to you? I have some questions. It's a haircut. It shouldn't have been particularly terrifying. There's something, though, because there's even an achievement for breaking all the glass in the barber shop.
Nice.
Fuck them mirrors, though. But I... my greatest experience with the game is just like questioning why the things in it were supposed to be presented as scary as opposed to actually being scared by them. Like, I did a little bit of introspection. I was like, what the fuck would have been so terrifying about being in an art gallery with statues? But no, the person was clearly very traumatized and felt like these statues were shooting laser beams at him, because that's where we're at in the game. Gameplay wise, the puzzles are fairly straightforward, although I will say there was a lot of time, there was a lot of like lull in the gameplay, not even where you're just like experiencing narrative, because there's none of that. It's all very, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
I don't either. But you're supposed to like kind of pick up the narrative from your surroundings as opposed to actually having it spoon fed to you. But there's these just lulls where you're like walking from area to area. There's nothing to interact with. There's no indication that you're going the right way or the wrong way. And then you'll just eventually, if you keep going enough, you'll stumble across a puzzle. My greatest gripe was I never was sure if I was experiencing the whole level, because there's no, okay, you went that way, or okay, you went this way. It's linear, but it feels like there should be more out there. And I get to the end of the level and I'm like, did I actually do it all? Was that it? I could have swore there was more, but there's just not. It's just, you start here, you walk there, solve the puzzle, end the level, do it again. Even just getting into the levels themselves had that element of what am I missing? Because you start off and like, you're literally, your character is represented by like this cracked childlike mannequin. And before each level, you're literally just falling through a void and there's misshapen blocks all over the place. And you're like, you can go to any of them. And I have no understanding of what this void segment is supposed to actually represent or be or do. It's just, you float, you land, you find a white spot, you go through it. And it, I'm not acknowledging DDA's joke in chat.
I mean, you know, now you have to.
You can do it.
Is it a mannequin or a mannequin't?
Oh my god. It's a mannequin't because it can't even make you understand what you're trying to do. And then that was my only like issue with the game, though, is that some kind of indication of yes, you're on the right path would be nice. Or yes, you're getting through this puzzle. Something, some kind of positive feedback in what you're doing
would
be good. Otherwise, you're just like, oh, the level ended. I guess I did it.
Hooray!
You know, and you know, I got an achievement, so I guess I did fine. Carry on. The void sequence too, like. After I beat the first level and I was going for the second, I realized I landed on the exact same platform and went through the same door. And I was like, okay, but now is that going to take me back to the last level? Am I going to have to do it again, or am I going to go somewhere else? It just didn't give me any indication of what to expect. And I literally stood there looking at the door like, is this even where I'm supposed to be? It was, and it took me to the next one, but it doesn't give you any indication that that's going to work, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting idea. It's the puzzles are solid, but the lack of any kind of guidance or like I said, positive feedback or reinforcement for what you're doing makes it a little more difficult to play when it just held my hand a little. I get that games are very on that path of, I don't want to hold your hand, but just a smidge. Show me I'm going the right way. That would help. Beyond that, though.
Well, overall, $15. What do you think?
I give this a certainly a more solid try it. Cause it does play well. I was impressed with it. I wasn't scared by it. It does make you think a little bit, but it could just use just a smidge of hand holding. So yeah, but it's not going to appeal. Like if you're a hardcore horror fan, you want the shit scared out of you. You're not going to get that with Inner Friend, but if you're just looking for something to kind of, you know, make you think a little bit, then you're going to be okay with it.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is called Super Toy Cars 2, developed and published by our friends at Eclipse Games, released May 1st on Xbox One for $14.99. Super Toy Cars 2 is a fast-paced arcade racing game where you control miniature cars that speed across amazing tracks made out of supersized everyday objects. Race, fight, crash, jump, play with the objects around the track alone or with friends. Provoke mayhem with your little toy car. Cole, tell us about Super Toy Cars 2. First off, we should say, if you want to hear a lot more about Super Toy Cars 2, check out the previous episode of this show that has a chat with Eduardo from Eclipse Games.
It was a good chat.
It was.
So Super Toy Cars 2 is pretty much what it sounds like. It's an arcade racer where you are playing with toy cars, kind of like Matchbox or Hot Wheels cars. But the tracks that you are racing on are kind of what a kid would imagine the tracks they're building looks like. Although I raised some questions to the kids who would imagine that they're racing their tracks along a roulette wheel in a casino. That one might be an adult who is playing with the kid is imagining what they're racing like. But other tracks include a diner, and there's one where it's like the display. I can't think of what that's fucking called right now. When music is playing and you have like the video display, it's the dots like an equalizer. Oh my god, the word
equalizer.
Is it just an equalizer?
Or a visualizer.
A visualizer. Thank you. I got stuck on equalizer and couldn't get past it. But yeah, it's the road looks like a visualizer for the music, and there are guitars, and it's very creative the way that these levels are designed. You play through them in cup style tournaments. The cups have limitations on what kind of vehicles can be used in them. So some of them can use super racers. Some of them can have open wheels. Some of them have to have the wacky cars, which is like slug bugs and Volkswagen buses. Some of them can have all of them. They don't care. Whatever. Bring whatever you want to drive. Then once you choose your cup, it goes through a series of different race modes. So you'll have a legitimate, just normal race. Whoever gets first wins. Get the fuck out of here. Go. then you may have a demolition mode, or you may have an elimination race, or you may have one where it's a time trial, or there's several different race modes that... I don't know if my mic picked that up.
The person driving by.
Yeah, you got it. Classic. speaking of super toy cars. so you have several different different modes that'll come up that you could play through. The better you do, the more score and stars you get until you either win the tournament or you don't. When you finish one, you get enough money. You can go on and buy another car. You can buy upgrades for your cars. And then you just keep doing it over and over again until you're tired of doing it. Yeah. And then you load it up a couple days later and do it again. It's a pretty easy kind of racer to play. You just pick it up and go for it. The one thing we did mention in the interview that holds true for the review is that sometimes it can be really difficult on tracks to see where the upcoming curves are.
Yeah, I found myself looking at the map more than the track sometimes in races with a lot of turns.
Yeah, and you could just very easily careen into a wall because you can't tell if you're supposed to go that way or not.
Or off the track.
Yeah, and for me that was a little worse because I was constantly looking for the shortcuts. And sometimes you're like, is that a shortcut? Can I go there? Is it going to be fine? Oh, no, that was not a shortcut. Do it again. And I would lose races because I would think, oh, that's where that shortcut was earlier. No, never mind. I'm on the floor now. This is not going to get me around the track. So there was, that was really my biggest gripe with the game. It's just that it's not always clear. Clearly, I am in the mood to complain about not having my handheld recently. And that's just carrying over. But some kind of light, some kind of indication, some kind of flashing, hey, dumbass, there's a curve coming. That would be handy.
Yeah, I could use some more like visual arrows on the map or something like that.
Yeah. I am horribly spoiled by games like literally every other racer where there are arrows on the ground and like they turn red to green to yellow if you're taking the curve okay or not. I need something to tell me if I'm being a dumbass.
Oh, Lord. You need an actual like a guideline for where you're driving, like in Forza. That would be
fantastic. I am, well, and
DDA inserts comment about women drivers.
In my defense, I don't even have a driver's license. I can't drive. So I never got my license. I shouldn't be expected to know how to drive well. And yet I still do better than most people in Forza. So come at me, bro.
Very true. Gotta mention, speaking of Forza, the soundtrack in this game is equally as awesome as a Forza game.
It really is.
It's a solid lineup of songs. I haven't found myself skipping any songs. I've bookmarked the playlist on Spotify of Super Toy Cars 2.
Nice. So
it's good stuff. I like listening to it.
Yeah. So it's super pretty. It plays, you know, mostly well, other than letting you fly off of the map. when you can't see a curve coming, but, and it sounds good. So, I mean, it ticks pretty much all the boxes minus, you know, the one complaint.
Yeah. So $15, your verdict?
I give it a buy it. I'm good with it.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
I agree. It's good stuff. And again, check out that interview last episode. So, good stuff. Next game to talk about is called Starcross, developed by Contigo Games, published by Whitethorn Digital, released April 29th on Xbox One and Switch for $9.99. Starcross is an action arcade game with a magical girl aesthetic and a cooperative twist. Join our cast of five spacefaring heroes as they travel across the stars, working together to strengthen their bond and defeat a looming evil that threatens the galaxy. Cole, tell us about Starcross.
Starcross is one of those games that is easy on the surface, and when you start playing it, you're like, I don't see how I could fuck this up. I'm gonna like knock this game out in 20 minutes. But then you get to playing it and you realize that maybe you're not as coordinated as you thought you were, and you might want to get your daughter to plug in a second controller so that you can have a little bit of help. If you're playing solo, you will control two of the female characters. Your choice. Every time you start the story, you get to choose which two characters you're going to play as. And you always have to take two, and I'll explain why in a second. one character will be mapped to the left thumbstick. The other character will be mapped to the right side of your controller. And at which point you will need to move both of them around the screen, which turns into a motherfucking bullet hell very, very quickly. You will need to navigate around the bullets while still managing to hit the enemies with the star that bounces between the two characters. So it's almost like playing Pong, except that the star will always go to the other characters. You don't have to worry about it like careening off of into the void and being gone and losing because of that. But you do need to worry about avoiding those bullets, because you only get 3 hits, and if you fail, fuck you. As you bounce the star back and forth between the two characters, their ultimate meter will fill up. And then you can unleash their ultimate. Each one of them has a different one. Although they all seemed pretty fairly effective. There wasn't any one that I was overwhelmingly attached to more than the others. Some of them did look a little cooler though, but it was just a visual thing. It's like, oh, I like the aesthetic of this attack better than the actual physical method of using another attack. Playing it 2-player, obviously, both of you get to control a character. You can, it makes it a lot easier to volley the star between the two of you. And also, with a little bit of communication, you have a little better, a better odds of, not getting fucked off the earth. Because that's what's going to happen when you're trying to play alone. I don't know how they expected anybody to be able to focus and control both characters through the bullet hell simultaneously. I'm ambidextrous and I couldn't do this shit. I just, like, my hands are going everywhere. I don't know. I immediately was like, number one, bring your controller.
Yeah, it's definitely a game that's more focused on co-op.
The funny part of it was that number one has never played a bullet hell. And this was her first experience with a bullet
hell. Welcome to the club.
She was not happy. She was like, why is this so hard? I'm like, you're just supposed to dodge. She's like, I don't know how. I don't fit between the bullets. So I went through the process of like trying to explain hitboxes, and she's like, well, where are ours? And I was like, I don't know, everywhere, because we keep getting hit no matter what we do. That said, at least the game is really forgiving. And if you're playing story mode and you die, as soon as one of you dies, it's the end of it. But you can just click retry, and even your star gauge will still stay as full as it was when you retry. So you don't have to like start at zero and work on trying to rebuild that star gauge. Which means if you're down to where you only have one hit left, if you're not like really close to defeating a boss, then it's kind of worth it to just die and start over and have your full health again and try again. Now, if you're playing against a boss, that's a different story, because your star gauge will still be full, but so will the boss's health. And nobody wants to go through fighting with a boss a second time if they don't have to.
Yeah.
So it's just more beneficial to be careful. Occasionally, health power-ups will drop, but they are so few and far between that they might as well not be there at all. You could go through several waves and not see a health drop.
Hmm.
If you are looking to complete the game achievement-wise, just know that you will be going through the story several times, because you have to play with different combinations of the characters.
So you're going to want to have a friend.
Yeah, you're going to want to have somebody to drag through the bullet hell with you. If the story and repeating it multiple times isn't a challenge enough for you, there's also an arcade mode. And this is just wave-based you start off, you work your way through the waves as they show up. Every now and then you'll get a boss. When you die, it's over and done with. You get a letter grade at the end of levels. But the scoring for that seemed very off to me. There was one time where we killed all of the enemies. We killed all of, we had all of our health. The only thing we did was have 62% for our sync, which is how many times we volley back and forth to each other. So we were at 62%, which seemed pretty good. And we got a C. And I was like, well, that sucks. And number one's like, that's awful. I don't get C's. I'm like, it's a game. Calm down. I get C's all the time in games. So let's not talk about Devil May Cry. So then the next level had a whole lot more bosses, or a whole lot more enemies. And we actually missed a few of them because some of them will get so far down to the edge of the screen that they just kind of poof away and you can't get to them. So we actually lost about four of the enemies. Our sync rate was only 55%, and I only had one hit left, but it gave us a B. And I don't understand why.
I don't know, but speaking of things we don't understand in life, Awesome Prime just dropped 10 bitties in chat, so thank you, Prime.
Drop it, bitch!
Prime is a good bean.
And thank you, Norg, as well.
Yes, Norg is also a good bean.
Yes, a lot of good beans.
So many good beans.
So many good beans.
I don't think people even noticed that we put the little bean bit symbol by their names.
Probably not. No one cares about your hard work. Yeah,
but they're adorable beans. So now we have fat cats and good beans. And
we do. Kitties and beans.
Please.
Which fits.
Please accept my good beans, Emily. So yeah.
Speaking of good beans, is Star-Crossed worth 999 beans?
That's a lot of beans. But I do think that the game is solid enough to justify a $10 price tag. It looks cute. It's got an interesting story. There's some LGBTQ representation thrown in there just out of nowhere. One of the characters is like, oh, I'm anything but straight. And I was like, damn. She just threw that out there. But yeah, I had a good time with it. I enjoyed the story. It can be a little cheesy and predictable, but I had a good time with it anyway. And number one and I got some good laughs, but awesome. Play it with a friend. Don't try to play it by yourself.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it sounds like something that's just not as good solo.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Ghost Sweeper, developed by Seven Raven Studios, published by Total Console, released April 28th on Xbox One for $4.99. Prepare yourself to face the most fun army of darkness ever seen in bright colors. Rounded ghosts, laughing pumpkins, creaking skeletons, and many other weird creatures are waiting for you. Cole, tell us about Ghost Sweeper.
This is gonna sound kind of mean. I didn't have a lot of hope for Ghost Sweeper when I was looking at it in the store, because the artwork, the title card, as a digital artist, there's a few things that tips me off that the person doing the artwork was not good. They made a lot of amateur mistakes, and for the love of God, I wanted to knock their hands away from certain tools that they clearly used to make the artwork. So I was like, that's okay. Don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge a game by its title card. I have played some really good games with some really shitty title cards. Let's go. So for Ghost Sweeper, you start off in the dark woods, and it gives you a map with the levels popping up. You play a level, you get 3 stars or 1 star if you suck. Then it opens it up to the next level. So once you click on the level, you go into it and you're given a puzzle platformer type of scene. You have the ability to create, I guess they're like clouds that you can create, or you can suck them back up in your little vacuum and make them go away, or you can hit them with your head and make them go away. But you need to like create little platforms so that you can get to keys and coins, and you need to create traps to lock away the ghosts or other monsters that you're going to encounter. I don't want to spoil it if anybody's actually concerned about Ghost Sweeper, but you can create like traps to lock away monsters so that you can get to the doors and get out and get to the next level. At the end of the level, you're given stars based on how fast you were, how many secrets you found is what I'm assuming that bottom one is for. I didn't ever get the fourth icon to give me a star. I couldn't get four stars on any level to save myself. I don't even know what it wants you to do. I'm sure there's a guide. I was trying to be good and just play the game. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do to get that fourth option. But if, you know, did you collect all the coins? Did you get through it without getting fucked up too many times? That kind of stuff to justify the stars. For the most part, it's very straightforward and easy. I did feel like the game kind of stifled you. It moves very slow. And the ability to suck up or shoot out the little blocks is not always as accurate as it could be. There are a lot of times where you push the button and you're like, I know I'm looking in this specific spot and pushing a button and nothing is happening.
Yeah.
Or you'd be like, I know that I sucked that block up, but there it sits. And then you do it and then you fall and then you have to start all over again. Except for the fact that it does time you for levels for a star. Most of the time I was just like, I don't care. Just let me get through it, regardless of how long it takes me. There were some levels. I don't know if it's a glitch or if I was just doing something wrong. You can go back and replay levels. And so, it felt like, or it didn't feel like it was a matter of no matter what I did, the task would not unlock the additional stars. Whatever how many stars I got that first time was it, no matter how good I did later on. I don't know if the best guess is that it's probably a glitch that it does that, because it seems like it should update the stars.
Yeah.
But it would not. I'm forever stuck at two stars on a couple of levels, even though I replayed them a good dozen times and actually beat all of the metrics. Don't know. Game hated me. I think it's a good idea on its surface. There's a lot of levels to play through. There's a lot of areas. It gets really creative with some of the monsters, but it just doesn't play solid enough. It's a little too janky to be like, oh, this is great. It's like, you got a solid foundation, but it could use some work.
Some refinement.
Yeah. A little polish goes a long way, especially, you know, in the crowded indie game sector.
Yeah. On the bright side, this one's only $5. So what's your verdict?
$5. Relatively easy completion. Solid enough. I think I'm okay with a fuck it. Why not? I don't think I would be like, oh yeah, jump on this. But, you know, if you want some easy achievements and you don't mind to play some janky platforming, you're going to be okay with it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We got some DLC to talk about. And I'm sure that you're a little on edge because we had to have you reinstall a game that scares you.
Oh, I have time for nothing else. I don't have time to be addicted to this game again.
Oh, man. Prime dropping 10 more biddies. George.
Dropping bits!
Thank you, Prime. Much appreciated. But yeah, the next game to talk about is Tropico 6 Spitter DLC, developed by Limbic Entertainment, published by Calypso Media, released April 23rd on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $9.99. Tropico 6's second DLC skyrockets you into the world of stardom and illustriousness. Interact with superstars by using Spitter, the only short message social networking app officially approved by the Tropican Ministry for Modern Communication and Smoke Signals. Cole, tell us about Tropico 6 Spitters DLC.
Tropico. So a new social media platform has sweeped your little island nations, and it is called Spitter, which is obviously a play on Twitter.
What? No.
You know, instead of blue with a white bird, it's blue with a white llama. The llama theme is very strong in Tropico 6, and it's the previous DLC was the Llama of Wall Street. We missed out on that one. We need to request it, by the way, because I need to spend more time with Tropico, clearly. excuse me. But for Spitter DLC, you do get a whole new island that you can play with. The map can be used in sandbox mode, and it does have a single mission to go along with it. I was a little bummed out that it's just one mission. I wanted some more excuses for playing with Spitter. But if you want, in the mission, if you want to build your clout on Spitter, you need the help of celebrities. So you have to build your island to lure celebrities in by building luxury hotels and new air. And then you need lavish amenities like beauty farms and rehab centers so that the celebrities will stay and love your island. And then everybody will want to use Spitter, where they are A, forced to follow you, and B, forced to read all your tweets.
Oh, spits. Lord.
Read all your spits. Not tweets. But, yeah, it's absolutely hilarious. It's just more Tropico goodness. It doesn't let you down. I love that the new edition of the social media really kind of changes your dynamic with the game. Just a smidge. It just lets you torment everybody just the right amount. I like the amenities that have been added for dealing with the celebrities. Although it feels a little rude to be like, yeah, you need celebrities. Here, have a rehab center. Problem solved.
Oh, Lord.
But it's good old Tropico, and that's the kind of humor that you're going to find in the game, and it doesn't let you down.
Well, then for the asking price of $10, how is this new DLC?
I think I do wish for a $10 price tag that there was more than just one mission added. The same thing, though, was carried over in the Llama of Wall Street. It was one new mission, one new map. But there are other things that are added in as well, like you get some more customization items for your president. There's new edicts that you can evoke. There's a new trait, and for this one, it's Narcissist. I think they're trying to send us a message here.
Probably.
But for $10, though, I do think it's enough. If you already enjoy the game, you're just going to, you know, have that much more fun with some extra content, and I think it's worth it for that.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to get Dark Mika in here. I asked if she's ready in chat, and she didn't reply to me, so we're just going to call her and see if she answers or not. We're going to see what happens. It's going to be a mystery to all of us.
I can't believe Aki would not answer you in chat. What is that? I know. That?
Yeah, that never happens.
I don't know. Yeah, seriously.
Fucking happen. I'm always paying attention. Totally.
Who would ever think that?
I'm totally not playing Poi right now. Totally.
Why are you playing Poi? You have review games you could be playing.
Because I've mostly finished them.
Goodness.
Well, the next game to talk about is called Arcade Spirits, developed by Fiction Factory Games, published by P-Cube, released May 1st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. What if the 1983 video game marketing crash never happened? Set in 20XX, Arcade Spirits is a visual novel romantic comedy with a different history where arcades still reign supreme as the ultimate place to play. Aki, tell us about Arcade Spirits.
You play as a nobody named Ari, or you can change their name to whatever the fuck you want. You get to pick what gender you go by and a little bit of the style. There's not a lot of character customization in the visuals department. But it's about your character just lost their job. They're living with their friend, Juniper. And she's like, here's a virtual life coach. It'll help you find your dream job, get off your ass and go do stuff, basically. In a much kinder way, but still, that's the gist of it. And it ends up telling you, hey, you should work at this place. You have 30 minutes before the interview starts, and the bus you need to ride to get there leaves in 9 minutes. Put on some decent clothes. You're like, okay, but it never bothers to tell you where you're going for the interview until you get there. So you're like, okay, I have an interview. All right, show up. I'm like, okay, it's a shopping mall. What fucking place? They're like, this place. Character's like, which fucking one? And it ends up being the arcade. And you're asked a bunch of weird fucking questions. And you get the job. Because that's just how the game has to work out. The entirety of the game is a visual novel, so it's all about reading and occasionally picking options. The options hold some importance, but they don't affect the story overall. It still goes the same beats. However, what the choices do is they change your character's personality type. Hmm. Which changes how you can answer some of the important questions that are asked of you. Some of the actions that you have to do are specific to whatever personality type you have. There's bitch, which they call gutsy. There's the joker, which they call quirky. Kind, which they call kindy. All of them end in Y because... that I don't know to annoy me, I think. And then logical, which they call logically or stability, one or the other, I can't remember. And then there's just your basic whatever, man, options, which I think are basically or something like that. So throughout it, most of the choices you make can raise one of the stats. Basically. And then sometimes you get things like, hey, you need to make this deal. It's how you're going to pass this is based on whatever trait most encapsulates you, or one of the top two, or what have you. And that's really all that changes. Also, with that, there's also a little dating sim thing in this game. Your personality and your interactions with seven different characters can make them like you if you interact with them more and do things that they like. And if you have a personality type that more matches them, it seems to increase their affection towards you. You got, I think it was 3 guys and 4 girls, one of which is a hidden route. And you can probably guess who it is after I name some of the characters. There's the dad bod Percy, who is obsessed with a game that's effectively Pac-Man. And he's
nice.
He's fairly wealthy to boot, which is nice. There's the guy who is basically the manager of the arcade that you work at, Gavin, who's a logical stick in the mud with a stick shoved so far up his ass you can make a teepee out of his fucking throat. Then there's the last guy is named Tio. That's He shortened his name to Tio. I can't remember what the hell his full name is. He's another person who's just a regular at the place, like Percy. He is, he plays Dance Dance Revolution, basically. It's this world's Dance Dance Revolution, which is just a dancing game. Then the girls are Naomi, who is the tech support, basically. She puts together all the arcades and keeps them working, all that fun stuff. There's Ashley, who is another floor attendant like you, and she also made the store's mascot, and she's a little Fruit Loopy. She's missing, I would say, a few screws, but I don't think she has any. So there's that. And then you got Queen Bee the Bitch. She's another one of the regulars, and she's a pro gamer at this fighting arcade game, and she's a Twitch streamer, basically. It's like, she's such a bitch. And then you have the last, which is the hidden character. And from all the named characters that I've provided, you can probably guess who it is, can't you?
I couldn't guess.
I know, right? It's just shocking. And basically, you're just at this small little arcade place, and you're trying to get your life together, which you eventually do. And you're going up against basically the fucking kingpin of the arcade scene, named Deco Nami, who's a dick, the proportions of which would make every man ashamed. So, yeah, it's pretty fun. There's no real changes in the story beat, no matter what your choices are. So it's fairly kinetic. It's, the only thing that changes is who you romance, if you romance anyone, because you can also choose to be friends with everyone, not bop anybody. But who the
could you nail fuck? Everyone?
I have not yet.
Nah.
But I am working my way through that. I started off without nailing anyone, amazingly. There was an achievement for it, and that's why I did it.
Okay.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have fucking done that. There's one for romancing every one of the other characters, and one for romancing all the characters. Whether that's for romancing each one of them or literally all of them at once, I don't know.
You're gonna find out.
Yeah, a part of me hopes that it's not for doing them all at once, because I don't need quite that many people. not my scene. I don't need Dad Bod, Percy, Gavin, or Tio, or Queen Bee. No thanks. I'll take the other three, though. Hell yeah.
Oh, but Lord.
Not those four. No. It's pretty good.
Well, $20 on Arcade Spirits. What do you think?
You're definitely getting the most out of your money for this one, so I'm totally for it, because you're going to have to replay this game literally each and every time. For every character and for romancing none of them, because the beats go throughout the entire story. It's not like you can just be like, oh, I make this choice real quick and now I'm on this romance path. No, it's about building it up throughout the entire game. Whilst you can skip through lots of it, it still has to be played for a while, because there's 8 chapters and they aren't short.
All right. Well, it's good to see another P-Cube game on Xbox as well, so bring on those visual novels.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll play them all.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Puzzle Palego, a drag and drop economy, developed and published by Hallgrim Games, released April 29th on Steam for $9.99. Puzzle Palego turns the classic wear chain based economy sim into a challenging puzzle. Help rebuild the network of goods production via deceptively simple drag and drop mechanics. Produce various goods exactly where the islanders need them, from wooden planks and wheat to barrels, beer and bread. Aki, tell us about Puzzle Palego.
Okay, I'm going to start this off by stating there's 101 levels in the game. I got this how many hours ago, Joe? Did I get this?
What? Not too long ago.
Yeah, less than 10 hours, I would say. I've already beaten 67 of the levels.
Damn.
And that was with me spending a lot of time also playing a tabletop RPG.
So is this just a really quick game, or are you just that good?
I think it's a little between the two. At first, it's fairly easy. There's different world. There's 15 different worlds in the game, and 101 levels total between all 15 of the worlds. Each world is based on one specific mechanic in the game. The first one is, oh, let's deal with just basic wood. All these houses need wood. Here's some wood sources. Get them there. And the next level is like, oh, now they need a smithy. So get coal and get unrefined metal together to make a smithy. There you go. And then the next one is plywood, I guess, I think was the next one. And then the one after that is tools, and then mixing the tools and the plywood to make barrels, and then mixing the tool and the wood to make sculptures. So every level just adds a little bit onto it, so it very quickly starts getting much more difficult. But every world has a pretty easy start to it for the most part, until you get to like the last like three or four worlds, and then it gets really hard even at the start. So about midway through, some of them get kind of hard at the end, but overall every world starts off pretty easy, and it continues to be easy up until about the end for most of them. It's pretty easy. The whole mechanic is, say you have this little forest here. Well, you click the forest and you drag out as many spaces as you want to create a pathway. And whenever you release the button, now you have logs that are put right there. Some houses need those logs, so you have to put it right next to a house because you can't build a path from that to the house. Well, later on, when you're making plywood, you click on the same logs and you drag it off to make another path to another location. And when you drop it, now suddenly you have plywood. And it does this through different resource areas. Like, there's a mine that pulls coal, there's a mine that pulls unrefined metal, and you have to just mix them at different points, which becomes fairly difficult because the pathways, you can't go over the same pathway. So if you make this long convoluted pathway that takes up half the screen for one resource, well, you're fucked, because now you can't use half the level because you're a dumbass. Not that I've done that three or four times at all. Totally. No,
not at all.
I'm too amazing for that. Yeah.
So anyway.
and another thing that also makes it fairly difficult is when you're mixing the elements, like with the coal and the unrefined metal to make a smithery, you have to create a path between the two of them as well. And wherever that path ends, touching whichever one of them, is where the smithy will be made. So if they're like five spaces away from each other, you draw a direct line from the coal to the unrefined metal. The smithy is made right next to the unrefined metal. If you go the other way, it's made right next to the coal. And if you zigzag all over the fucking place and get it to the other side of one of them, it appears on that other side. So you have to keep making all these pathways, and you run out of room so fucking quickly. And, you know, they just keep adding more things that you need to mix together, more things that you need to keep phasing out, like with the logs turning into the plywood just by pulling it out another section, not mixing it with anything. You keep making different things like that. Like, there's one for hay turning into a windmill or a grind mill, whatever, which eventually makes bread when you mix it with something else. I can't remember anymore, but it gets really complicated really quickly just because there's so much and all these pathways, you can't cross over them again. So I say it's a fairly hard game, especially late game. Good luck to people in late game, because fuck.
So it starts off easy, it ends hard. Sounds like it should.
yeah, pretty much.
So your overall verdict, $10 on this one, what do you think?
Oh yeah, totally. I didn't realize it was only $10. Oh yes, totally.
Does no one ever fucking listen when I do the intros and say the price?
I do.
No, not at all. God damn it. I'm not even going to lie. No, I don't.
God damn it.
I used to put that stuff into my review, and I never got, you know, good job for that, so I stopped paying attention. Deal with it.
Son of a bitch. All right, well, we got one last thing that we got to take care of tonight, and that's a little giveaway that we're doing. We asked people to send us an email telling us why they want the game Doug Hates His Job on Xbox One. We got ourselves a couple of entries, and here we go. We're going to go through them. I figure there's three of us. There's three codes to give away, and we'll give them away in that kind of fashion.
Sounds good.
First email is from Scott Sandover, who says, "Hey guys, thanks for the opportunity to win a game code for Doug Hates His Job. I would love to win this as I have recently been made redundant due to the pandemic, and therefore I hate my job just like Doug, so it seems like perfect timing to play this game. Thank you for the chance. Look forward to the podcast as always. Stay safe." So, hates his job because he don't got one.
Oh no.
Next email is from Latino Heat, who says, "Good evening to the SML podcast. I was astonished to see such creative video game made for someone who hated their job. Well, here's my story. I was attending school. I had to get a job so life could be a bit easier with finances. I applied for a job working in the food industry in an Italian restaurant, which I thought would be fine. Well, for starters, the owners were from Korea. They didn't know shit about running an Italian restaurant, but since they were the bosses, I had to do as I was told. My job title was to be a food server and run the cashier, which I believe to this day I did an awesome job. During my first 2 months, things went smooth until my bosses had me doing things that were not a part of my job description title. They had me cleaning tables and cleaning out dirty dishes to the kitchen. Fine. A week later, he told me, 'I need you to start changing all the garbage bins and take out the trash to the back of the restaurant.' At this point, I was starting to get pissed off, because for whatever reason, I suspected my bosses didn't like me. This went on for 3 months, but the abuse didn't end there. And on the anniversary of my 4th month on the job, I got promoted to cleaning shit out of the toilets duty, which didn't sit well with me. You would be surprised how nasty some restaurant toilets can actually be. Just plain disgusting. I can totally believe how disgusting restaurant toilets can be."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've all had to go at least once, and they are some of the worst.
Jesus. Yeah. I lasted 6 months on the job, enduring hatred until I couldn't take it anymore. At this point, I wanted to beat the crap out of my bosses and catch a body for being complete assholes with me for no apparent reason and giving me hell when all I was doing was trying to make my life easier for myself. But I chose leaving the job over jail because it was the right thing to do. Once again, I want to thank the SML podcast and everyone for all you do, and shout out to everyone for hearing my job grief." Wow, that was a terrible job.
Yeah, I think I may have gone with the jail. I think that would have been more fun for me.
Yeah.
Ooh. All right. Well, next email is from someone named Dark Mika's on Fire.
Okay, oh my God.
So you can't pick yourself, obviously.
Are you sure?
We're going to make that rule here. Says, "Hey all, I want to win this game because I never worked a day in my life, so I'd like to see what it's like from a video game because I understand those. I want to see the plethora of reasons there are for Doug to hate his job."
Oh, you tried to woo me. So I can
reinforce my desire not to work. I'm a potato. I know. I don't care. So Aki says, "I am a potato. And I have pork clawing at my leg. So thank you, pork. That felt fucking wonderful." All right. Next email is from Matt Malone, who says, "My reason that I should win is that I'm a human person on disability, and I hate Doug's job so much I actually hate your job, and my own pales in comparison how much I hate it." So he hates our job.
Same. Wait.
Hey. All right. Next email is from John Prudlow, who says, Dear SML Podcast, why does Doug hate his job? Well, let me tell you, who the fluck doesn't hate their job? I mean, besides supermodels, fighter pilots, action heroes, Super Bowl athletes, world famous musicians, hedge fund billionaires, jet setting playboys, songwriters, song critics, food critics, food show TV stars, soap stars, movie stars, porn star photographers, stars that live a billion years in the galaxy and just have to exist, video game testers, video game designers, competitive hot dog eaters, pool boys, working the rich, lonely, gold digger wives, arcade patrons, famous painters, famous sculptors, famous architects, famous artists, artists who enjoy their craft, crafters, basket weavers, Superman, the Avengers, the Amish, and Bill Gates. Office jobs like Doug's may not be the worst, but they sure as hell ain't fun if you're not calling the shots. You get up in the morning, take a shit, put on clothes, drive into traffic, sit in traffic, honk your horn at traffic, listen to the radio in the car next to you. Listen to the radio in the car next to you. That one got me. Park in the furthest spot from your office. Get harassed by your boss. Get harassed by your boss's boss. Do 5 minutes of water cooler venting while you try to fix the printer. Get patronized by obnoxious coworkers. Fill out TPS reports. Drive back into traffic. Lather, rinse, repeat. See Mike Judge's office space. Doug seems to make the best of a situation. The gameplay for Doug's adventure looks sick. Who wouldn't want to have the job they hate turn into a beat-em-up with top-down driving, 2D platforming, stealth, choose-your-own-adventure, and more? I wouldn't say I've been missing work, Bob, but I'd love to have a copy of this awesome-looking game just so I could see how much Doug hates his job. Thanks for the opportunity. Wow. What an email.
Yeah.
How do you sum that up into, like, 5 words?
Long story about how to get to work. Close enough to 5.
Okay, long story about work.
Sure, that works.
Final email is from Jordan, who says, Hey, SML and Joe, over 30 million Americans have filed for unemployment in the last 6 weeks. While I realize Doug is a fictional character, one has to wonder just how bad his job really is. Is he an essential worker? What kind of dealings does his office handle? Does he have any rugrats at home making his life miserable like me? One of the screenshots I saw had Doug punching an old woman in the park, which makes me think he might work for the U.S. Postal Service. So many questions, and the only way they could be answered is to choose me as a winner so I can experience this interactive mockumentary firsthand. Jordan 650. All right, so there we have it.
Can I choose first, since I can't choose myself?
Well, we gotta recap them. Scott says he hates his job because he don't got one. Latino Heat dealt with terrible bosses. You are a potato. Matt Malone hates our job. John Prudlow has a long story about work. And Jordan wants to punch an old woman in the park.
Okay.
So, 3 codes, 3 of us. Who wants to pick a winner? Aki, you said you had one. Who?
BXL.
So, you're giving one to Latino Heat. All right. Cole, do you have a winner?
Yeah, I want to go with Matt Malone.
Matt Malone, who hates our job.
Yep.
All right, and
speaks
I'm going
to my soul.
It comes down to John Prudlow, who had the long story about work, and Jordan, who wants to punch an old lady. I think I got to give it to John on this one. That was just listening to the person next to you, listening to their radio. It got me.
Yep.
So. All right. Thank you to everyone who entered the contest. If you didn't win, keep an eye on our Twitter. We are going to be doing another giveaway with a couple more copies of the game. So, Aki, you'll have to enter that one, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will. And I can do that.
But that is it for this episode. Thank you again to everyone for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks again to Grant for coming on and chatting with us. Thanks again to Chris Baker for coming on and chatting with us. Dreadnautical is available right now on the platform of your choice, so go check it out. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
No.
That doesn't help me.
Well, I could have took Aki's turn Titus of phrase sprinkles. And just, shouted out obscenities.
Hey, obscenities. I just say titty sprinkles. None of that's obscene.
So, Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
No. That's a hill I've decided to die on here.
Peace.